We should tell people what the hell we're doing, though, I guess, right? This is West Coast Project, and this is the podcast for Fargo on Fargo TV on West Coast Project. And my name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
What'd you think of 308 Who Rules the Land of Denial, Michelle?
I did not like it.
Oh, my God.
I know. Mike loved it. He loved it. And watching it for the second time with him tonight, I liked it more than I liked it by myself. But we'll have to talk about it, and you'll have to tell me your answers, because I think I got more questions than I got answers. And I really don't want to be cynical about it. I've felt a whole lot better about it right after Mike and I watched it, and then we watched some other stuff, and I just felt this cynicism creeping back in.
You know, I don't know what to say other than to maybe just start getting into it and seeing what we come up with.
Okay, I think that's a good idea. Well, we start off when it's coming on. It's the same way it's been coming on for a few episodes now. You know, they're throwing the words this and then is a true, you know, as they're playing these one word at a time flashing across the screen, and we're scene jumping to the end of last week. The bus driving down the road. Citizen Z, it looks like, is welding something, messing with some large piece of metal. And we see that there was something in the road that actually caused the bus crash. And then we go straight into the crash, and we see Wrench not hearing what's going on. We get, like, the muffled nothing. And then we see him pull Nikki up, and they're both working to get loose from the shackles as the pig face... Citizen Z and Yuri and Mimo are trying to get in.
Yeah, so what they're welding is the device that flips the bus over, the leverage bar or whatever.
Right. The citizens, and they're killing people as they go, too. I think they killed the bus driver as they're trying to get through there. They're assaulting people, and they're welding their way, trying to break into the back.
How worried were you at the time here that Nikki and Wrench were going to get us to escape?
Well, I didn't know. Even with the preview, I didn't know that they did escape. I mean, I knew that they weren't on the bus, but I didn't know that. I actually thought that they had been gotten by Yuri and Mimo. And I don't think I knew Citizen Z was there last week. But
yeah, I thought they had gotten them. Yeah, this is not a short... dilemma. It's a good 10, 12, 15 minutes of the show, them affecting their escape.
We have to remember that probably not 24 hours ago, Nikki was beaten by Yuri, maybe 36 hours ago or something now, but not long ago. And she is so sore from that. And then trying to go out the window and then being in jail and then this bus crash and then an arrow through the leg. I mean, Nikki's been...
Yeah, she's in a pretty low freaking spot here to go through all... And then she has to be strong and escape. It is pretty... resilient of her to be able to pull this off.
It is. And I did love Wrench in this, them going through the woods, and I loved how he did what he could. Of course, she notices that he's deaf, and that, you know, she's like, really? This is who I'm chained with? So that blew our theory that maybe they knew one another. You know, we were thinking that maybe there was some kind of conspiracy with all that, but none of that was true.
Right.
Now, the part where it's morning, and Wrench and Nikki come to this clearing, and she's talking about where they are, and it's based on a vague estimation of the time in the bus, and did she sleep, and what direction they're heading, and all that. And they stop, and he writes, "After you?" question mark, and Nikki replies, "Sorry." What was that?
That means, are they after you? And she said, "Yeah, sorry." Like, I...
Oh, okay. Okay. But then we see as they're in that clearing and having this conversation, writing it in the snow, which was brilliant. I mean, I don't know why, you know, I would have never thought to do that for some stupid reason, but that was brilliant for them to do that. But from a distance, we see Yuri and Citizen Z watching them. And this is where Yuri sees the Helga tattoo on Citizen Z's wrist.
Right.
And he says that he knew a Helga and all she did was talk, talk, talk.
Right.
And about that time, an arrow hits him in his wolf head. And I thought he was dead.
Yeah, me too. First, I expected to see his head, his whole body, with, you know, the arrow through the head pinned to that tree.
But that's not what it is. There's some guys just happen to be out, I guess, wolf hunting, and they see that it's the mask that's pinned to the tree. And, of course, Yuri's behind them, and it ain't good for them because suddenly their bow and arrow is in Yuri's hands. So we know that didn't end well for them. So they continue to walk through this desolate, snowy, cold forest. And Nikki, this is where she starts remembering the conversation with Ray. So she's specifically remembering asking him to get the money after he forgot it, the getaway money. And Yuri and Citizen Z are on their trail this whole time. They're barely staying a step ahead of them. And she's having this, I don't know, what do you think she was doing? I actually made a note. Did you have an opinion on Nikki's feelings for Ray after this and why?
Well, I would think in light of this, in light of the supernatural elements in this episode, you know, I kind of think she was thinking of Ray, remembering the conversation, but I also maybe choose to believe, like you do if you've ever had a dream of somebody that's not around anymore and they kind of talk to you in your dream. I think Ray was talking to her a little bit. And she was kind of hearing that last conversation and thinking, you know, Ray, is that really Ray with me, or am I just remembering it? It's kind of a blurred, and for us, the audience, it wasn't clear. You know, was it Ray, some sort of ghost floating around in this woods with them, or is that just her remembering that final conversation?
Yeah, I felt like she was remembering, the way I took this particular thing was that she was remembering their final conversation, and she felt bad because she remembered the fact that she pressured him to go back for the money. She was worried for him going back for the money, so much so that she offered to do it herself. And then, of course, he lost his life going back there. So I felt like more than that, I felt like she was not doing well physically at that point. But I did feel like that was her guilt. They go to this axe that's on this stump in the ground, like you said, and they start to try to chop themselves apart. Now, but we did see it with Nikki that she got shot through, it looked like through the calf. And they get Citizen Z, they attack him, grab him up, and they use that cable, that chain in between their wrist to, I thought they were just going to strangle him with it, but they actually decapitate Citizen Z as soon as it happens. Nikki can't go anywhere. She has this arrow through her calf muscle, and Wrench has her bite down on this bloody stick while he breaks and rips this arrow out of her leg. And she didn't want to do it, but she had to do it. But it's nighttime, and they're still walking. They're hobbling away, and they come upon a bowling alley. And there's nobody in there, except there's like a guy cleaning, and there's this guy behind the counter that we never even see.
First of all, why is it there? Why is there a bowling alley in the middle of nowhere in the woods?
He goes up to the counter, and the guy asks her if she wants shoes. I mean, she's like covered in blood and all this kind of stuff. She looks horrible, and he wants to know if she wants to bowl. And of course, she wants a drink. So she gets a drink, and then we see the guy beside her. What did you say his name was? I forgot.
His name in the episode is Paul Moraine.
Okay, Paul. And Paul, you know, he starts talking about Job sat on his dung heap covered in boils. And she just kind of gives him like this kind of, you know, she cuts her eyes at him and says, "Hey, dude, it's been a long day." And he goes into their all long life is suffering.
Yeah, so let's try to define a few characters here. So,
okay.
Paul Moraine in the Hebrew religious context is the wandering Jew. He made fun of Jesus on the way to his crucifixion, and later on was punished by being doomed with the fate that he would walk the earth until the second coming. Okay, so here's what we know. So we know Yuri in the story. I mean, you could attach, like, that's insane that they would say that. But in the story, Yuri is the Cossack guy from Berlin. You know, he's caught now by this guy who wanders the earth and delivers messages for God to the people that deserve it, the vengeance. So he's found Yuri, this Cossack murderer of the Jews of Uman. So Yuri's this religious figure in a negative light, and Paul Moraine is this guy serving out his sentence of wandering the earth. And, you know, that's why when they come to the bowling alley, that's why all this weird stuff starts to happen.
The bowling alley is not religious. And her saying that she's in a bowling alley and him saying, oh, that's what this is to you, that's what I don't get, right? And then him pulling the kitten named Ray out and handing the kitten. I know Ray's not a kitten name, but...
Mm-hmm. You gotta suspend some stuff, Michelle, or you're not gonna enjoy any of the story. So yeah, I mean, even their words, it's been a long day, Mister. It's been a long day. Nikki's earthly here, right? It's been a long day. I don't need to hear about Job and his dung heap. I need a glass of whiskey. And then he replies in a religious context or in a religious theme, they're all long days. That's the nature of all of our existence. Life is suffering, and you're beginning to understand that. And she just, again, earthly response, amen, weird guy at the bar. And then he pulls out the kitten and says, hey, his name's Ray. Now, she's probably starting to think, how the hell could this guy know that my friend Ray was just killed? So, you know, it's an enlightenment for Nikki. It's a weird thing to happen to her, and she tries to just say earthly things to reply to him, but I think you have to suspend the earthliness of it and just accept the story, the message in the story that the guys are, I guess Noah Hawley, is trying to deliver to us.
Okay, fair enough, but I don't get it. Can you tell me the story that he's trying to tell her in this?
You know, like, you could read the Bible, and the Bible's full of, I think, parables and stories that weren't really true that give us meaning to things in our life, that give us help us understand the difficulties of life. Where does your soul go when you die? You may have a belief, and you may think you have the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that, but this guy gives Nikki kind of an answer to, well, when Ray died, his soul is now in this other being, this little kitten. Well, you know, I saw Nikki changing here. I saw her like, okay, weird guy at the bar trying to hit on me with these lines about Job and all days are long days. And now you got a cute kitten. I get it. You're trying to get my attention. But and then its name is Ray. And then it's like, whoa, wait a second here. What's going on here? And then she actually, I think she literally says, Ray, is that you? As she's looking, you know, face to face to the kitten.
But then Paul asks her if she's been to this place before. And this is where she says the bowling alley. And he says, is that what you see? That's, you know.
Well, maybe that means, have you been to this place of understanding or this place of trying to understand meaning?
Well, then he says, we all end up here eventually to be weighed and judged. Yeah. But then he asks if she wants to, if they need a ride. That's the end of it, pretty much. There's a little more, but that's pretty much the end of this scene. And he asks her if she needs a ride. There's a green Volkswagen Beetle outside. Keys are under the mat. You and your friend take it. Right. And then he says, don't thank me. Deliver a message when the time comes to the wicked.
Right, and so it's a normal place. So it's a bowling alley. She goes in. There's really weird inside. She's like, she's cynical. Then she turns a little bit, like, wow, maybe there is some meaning here. The cat looks at her like, is this Ray staring me back in my eyes? Like, is that you, really you, Ray? And then he says, have you been here before? And I guess I attach less literal meaning to, like, have you been to this bowling alley before? The one in the woods of, you know, Fargo? It's a place of confusion or a place of, like, needing to find answers. It's not a literal place. It's a place in your mind.
Okay, see, I could get that if they didn't mix it,
well,
right?
That's the cool part of the story. So it's normal, it bumps up against supernatural, and then it recedes again back to normal.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It tries to twist this back to normal. Because then they go out, and they suddenly have a green Volkswagen Beetle outside with a key in it.
Well, so, how is that not being normal, bumping up against supernatural and receding back to normal?
Because the guy didn't know he was in a bowling alley. So wherever they are in her mind...
He didn't say that because he didn't know where he was. He was just amused that that's what she was calling it. This place where you ended up, Nikki, with confusion and needing help. You're calling it a bowling alley? That's interesting. It doesn't mean that I don't understand it to be a bowling alley. It was just him. It was him kind of chuckling at her thinking of it as a bowling alley.
Okay.
And for us as viewers of this story, it's a bowling alley because it has to be someplace.
Okay, like I said, that makes sense to me.
A stump in the woods that, you know, she's...
Well, right, but him asking her if she's been to this place before, and then she says a bowling alley, and he says, is that what you see? Maybe he is saying, look beyond,
Interesting, mere mortal human, that you think of this as a bowling alley. I'm here giving you great... insight to the meaning of what is the meaning of, the, of this, right? He's like, he's spiritually supernatural to her, and it's interesting to him that she thinks of it as a bowling alley.
Well, then she gets up to walk away. He tells her she has to leave the cat. So she kisses
We missed a whole bunch of stuff here, though,
Michelle. Okay, tell me.
So she's hugging the cat, and while she's doing that, he's asking her, are you familiar with how the cat's soul, you know, you talked about that. But then she says, Ezrae, is that you? And then he says, unfortunately, some souls cannot find a body to enter and they become lost. Just like Rabbi Nachman's Jewish victims of the massacre at Yuma were lost. And so thousands of humans were killed by the Cossacks in history, and their bodies were dumped in a hole. So that's, Yuri is a Russian Cossack, and all these souls are lost in some purgatory because of the Cossacks murdering them, just because they're religious. The pogrom was the Jewish, the Cossacks murdering the Jews, and what, well, I don't even know historically the time period, but anyway, these souls got, you know, these people got their lives stolen from them by these rampaging Cossacks, and that's what Yuri is. And one of the people was this woman that Citizen Z had the tattoo of. What's her name? I can't remember her first name.
Helga.
So he's trying to tell us in the story that you recognize Ray and the little kitten. So Ray's lucky because you recognize him in the little kitten. Unfortunately, some souls don't have a little kitten. They don't have a body that they can enter, and they become lost. So he's there. His wanderer of the earth chore is to help those lost souls get vengeance or find answers.
Okay, see, I didn't take that at all. I felt like he was saying that sometimes souls get lost and they can't find a human to attach to. So he was saying that Ray attached to this kitten in place of to a human. But that's just the way I took that. That statement. I could be totally wrong because...
No, I don't think it needs to be a human. Ray was lucky because he was essentially good enough to find a venue, and that was the little kitten. And the people that are unfortunate don't have those opportunities to find new life. And it's not always human, but they don't have the opportunity, and so they're lost. They're in this purgatory or whatever your religion tells you it is. And that's what these Jewish victims of the pogrom are. And Yuri...
Okay. All this, I'm going to take everything that you're saying and tell me what this has to do with this story and how deep this is. If we are to, you know, if I had seen it the way you see it, which I didn't, and I'd have to go back and watch it with you sitting beside me telling me to get all this in the way you see it. But... what does this have to do with this story?
Well, I think most of Cohen's work is like this, like what, you know, a simple man, what is the meaning of life? What happens after I die? You know, what?
Yeah, but I mean, to pull all of this other stuff in, it just feels way too deep. And I know we've kind of touched on it throughout this whole series this time because VMV does a lot, but I don't know. It just feels so deep to me for this one scene. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's very deep. It's very, very deep. It's not made to be breezed through and, well, okay, Nikki was at this bowling alley while she's getting chased by these dudes and this weird guy helped her. And, oh, there was a cat that might have reminded her of Roy. I think you have to entertain the religious and meaningful parts of it, because I think that's what Noah Hawley intends. Because I think, you know, and I'm stretching three or four levels here, but I think that's what the Coens intended. And he's putting a magnifying glass on the onion and peeling back the layers of what the Coens intended, and he's being true to that. I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The other thing we missed is that when the Cossacks were dumped in the hole, all their thousands of bodies were dumped in a hole, this rabbi that remembered this and crafted this story called that hole, that grave, a garden. And he tells this to Nikki, Paul. He says he called the grave a garden. And that
he wanted to be buried there.
His soul would bind and comfort there. So that's what Paul's role is. He's wandering the earth, trying to comfort and help these unfortunate souls. And that's where he says, "Have you been to this place before?" And she's like, "The bowling alley?" And what he really means is this place, this situation of where there are lost souls and, you know, I have to help them. And have you ever been in a place where you had to help people that were unfortunate and they needed, you know, something more than what they had that you might be able to offer to them? And, you know, and she's floating on the surface of this meaning, and she may not totally dip underneath and get it all, but she's open to it, I think. She doesn't call this guy a frickin' loon. And she takes the kitten. She wants to keep the kitten. And he tells her she has to give it back. But that's what she says, bowling alley? Because she doesn't really understand it. You know, I don't think it's meant to be easily understood.
No, I mean, I hope not, because it was not easily understood by me. But then she makes it, like, lighthearted again. She tells the guy to put a little beer in a bowl for the cat when the gophers play.
Yeah.
And he agrees to it. So she takes all of this deep, you know, content, and then she brings it right back up, and they
That's deep. That goes deeper for me, for Nikki. She said, "Give Ray some beer for when he watches the Golden Gophers, the Minnesota Gophers. He loved that watching hockey." Well, wait, Ray's dead. Why would she want him to do that? She's starting to believe that maybe this little kitten is the soul of Ray.
Oh, she believes the kitten's is Ray. She believes that. And the way this little kitten looked, the way they got that little kitten to look at her was pretty sweet.
So let's kind of finish this off. He says, we all end up here eventually, bowling alley / heaven / purgatory / place in your mind where you're uncertain about things. But we all end up here eventually to be weighed and judged now for you and your friend. And they look over at Wrench. You know, it's their time. Paul is imparting on Nikki that Wrench, I've convinced him that he's on a better path now, not to stay behind. And you, and
but he didn't mean he's convinced Wrench, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't talk to Wrench.
Well,
I felt like he was talking about he convinced. See, it felt to me like, not knowing everything that you're telling me now and not looking at it like this, it was like, you know, he had had a conversation with the higher-ups in heaven, so to speak, to say, I convinced him that he was on a better path and that he should be allowed to come along too.
And I think that isn't words like, okay, Wrench, come on over, now it's your turn to talk to me. I think it's maybe on the bus when Wrench decided, hey, I could help this chick out at my own peril. That's his decision to become on a better path. He was convinced somehow by his conscience or I better do the right thing, not to stay behind, not to bow out on this poor chick who's about to get slaughtered, but I'll help her.
Okay, but who did Paul talk to?
He didn't talk
about him.
He didn't. He convinced, you know, he's essentially God. Think of him as God or the spirit that helps people make the right choices. If you can't do that, all this stuff I'm saying is just nonsense. But I convinced him that he was on a better path and not stay behind. And then he says, and you? I'll finish what I think about this, and then you can tell me what you think. Then he says, and you? And Nikki says, what about me? And then he says the weird words. He says, it's El Neka Ma Edu Mai. Who will rise for me against the wicked? Who will take a stand against evildoers? And so I think that means for all the people that have no one to help them, who will help them? Who will stand up and help them? Who will help the people that were murdered and dumped in a hole? Who will help the poor chick on the bus that's just going to get slaughtered by the strong guys because she's chained to the floor? And then he said, then he lets it all rise back up to the earthly surface, and he says, "All right, you need a ride in my VW Beetle. Here's the keys, or I'll tell you where the keys are." So it dips down and it comes back up, and it's really hard maybe to figure out like the total logical parts of it because they aren't there. It's spiritual. I think you have to look at it that way.
I just think it's something so heavy for the kind of show this is, and I think it's something so deep for the kind of show that this is, that it feels out of place to me, no matter what they're trying to say. This could be said in a much lighter tone, I think, and have maybe more meaning because more people would understand it. I mean, I who knows, Mike? Maybe I just didn't get it. Maybe it's just not my thing.
The Bible. He references a part, again, I'm not religious, so I don't know what document I'm even talking about here, but Obadiah chapter 1, verse 4. Look it up. Maybe it's in the Bible or the Hebrew, maybe the Old Testament, Obadiah 1, 4. And maybe that will help you understand it, or maybe that will give you more clarity with it.
Okay.
But essentially, he's not ready to take Nikki away to heaven because she's not done yet. He needs her to deliver a message when the time comes. And that message is to the wicked. Tell the wicked this when the time comes. Here's what she can't remember. She tries to repeat it back, and he's like, "Oh, don't worry, you'll remember it when you need to. Though thou exalt thyself like the eagle, though thou make thy nest among the stars, thence will I bring thee down, saith the Lord."
Right.
And of course, no one would freaking remember that, right? So it has.
Well, that is Obadiah 1:4, and okay. That's the King James version of Obadiah 1:4.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe read that chapter, and it'll be more clarifying. But I see this guy as a spiritual figure, helping the unfortunate souls that need it, and wreaking revenge on the sad frickin' sacks that hurt other people. And she's about to deliver this message now. Probably that message is going to be to Yuri.
Right? You think the message is going to be to Yuri?
Or maybe VM Varga.
Okay.
Yeah, or because Mimo, or, you know, somebody in, certainly the principal of those three, the leader or whatever.
So we've gotten through literally like the first, 14, 15 minutes of the show, and we have talked about this for an hour and 13 minutes. Do you realize that?
Well, it's good, though. It's really, that's why I enjoyed this so much, because it had so much meaning. And it took me more than an hour to write this, to try to try to listen to this and write it down, and then try to figure out what he was trying to do and say.
So did you look any of this stuff up? Because this is one time that I was super tempted to look it up. I didn't. But I was really tempted to see other people's takes on this one.
No, but I stopped the show and replayed it like 50 times and reversed it 30 seconds. What the hell did he say? El nekama adu mai, and I'm probably saying that wrong. El nekama ma adu mai, who will rise against the wicked. And that's my. You know, slang for it. I don't even know how to spell it. I just did it phonetically.
Well, I thought it was really deep. I thought it was too deep for what we're doing. I do like some of the things that you've brought to my mind about it. It's explained it better to me about what was going on. I guess I worry that the casual watcher of this show, if there is such a thing, is not going to get all of this at all. It's not going to even be able to get any of this. I feel like it's so, it's like you said, you had to rewatch it 50 times, and you probably really did close to that many times, because I know I watched it a bunch myself and still didn't.
Well, I watched the whole thing, but I would stop and rewind. And we're not even really done with this bowling alley, because now Yuri comes in and gets his message from Paul.
Oh, I know. And I'm just wondering if the casual observer, the casual watcher, the person who watches this for entertainment, if this isn't just way too much.
They may not be done with it either. There are two episodes left. They may not be done clarifying what exactly Paul is and what he means. And maybe people just don't do podcasts, don't sit and go, now what the hell? How am I ever going to unwind this and figure this out? And they go back and rewatch. Maybe they just don't.
Well, Mike was even saying there's so much to talk about in this. He goes, I don't know how you're going to get through it. I don't know how, because he was saying there's so much to talk about. But what, again, I'll ask, and if you know, you know, and if you don't, it's fine. But what was the point of this in this overall show, in this series, in this season 3 of Fargo? What was the point of this huge, you know, philosophical dump on us right here?
I think it's just that I think it's the Cones interpret. I think the Cones are obviously Jewish. I don't know what their childhood and with religion. I don't know much about that, but I think it's fascinated them. It always pops up in all of their movies. You watch the Fishnado and the Supermarket King found the money. I mean, and Ray got the car and Emmett got the nice part of the stamps and started. And so their lives diverged. There's fate, you know, there's fate somewhere in charge of and some maybe not so much. And I think the Coens are really fascinated with the fates and how things develop for people. And is there really justice? You know, they don't know for sure any more than anyone else does. But is there really justice for the evil people that slaughtered another group of people?
Well, there is in their movies. I think we can say that. You know, I would agree that they like to see the rights or the wrongs righted. We see that a lot. So that's one thing that you can pretty much come out on with this, is that, you know, good usually, I mean, I don't think we've had one so far that good hasn't prevailed, at least predominantly.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the message, that good. I mean, they did this with what's his freaking name?
Colin?
No. Who's the guy in the No Country for Old Men?
Chigurh?
Yeah, Anton Chigurh. He never died. He essentially was an overly human being, too, that you don't kill off evil. It rolls on. It keeps going. Even when this story's over, there's still evil out there. It's going to roll on. It's going to be there forever. You just have to deal with it. Life's hard. You know, that's what literally Paul says here. Life's hard.
Okay, well, I got one more question, though. You said that Yuri, we find out, is this Yuri from season 3, episode 1, the guy, when it first started out, that they were blaming the other guy for killing this Helga, which is great. But wasn't that set back in time? Was that now?
Yeah, probably 1950.
Yeah, I was thinking it was in the 40s or 50s or maybe even 60s, but it was before now, right? And Yuri, and this is 2011.
I know, Yuri's, but Michelle, you're still attaching. I mean, how long do you think Paul's been wandering the earth, looking like a 52-year-old dude? He's, you know, he's timeless. He's how long?
But what I'm asking about Yuri, I'm asking if this is Yuri, how old is Yuri?
Well, in human form, you may be able to attach a number to him, but I think he's always kind of been around.
So you think Yuri is the evil. He's the evil, like Anton Chigurh or whatever. Then
they give him an identity. In the next scene, when he comes and talks to Paul, he's identified by Paul. But I think he's a representative of things, just like Paul is and just like Anton Chigurh is. Anton Chigurh wasn't. You know, he's always going to look like he does. He just rolls through time as this evil.
Okay, well let's go on if you're done with that, and we'll say that Nikki and Wrench go outside. They get in the Green Beetle. They drive away. Just as Yuri, minus his ear, we see now that arrow took his ear off. Plus his compound bow come walking in and asking for napkins and vodka, and he looks. If we thought Nikki and Wrench looked bad, they look like gems compared to Yuri here. And Paul sitting beside him, and he calls him Yuri, and he says he has a message for him, and we see this village of people.
Right. So he says to Yuri, "You are Yuri Gurkha, Cossack of the Plains, grandchild of the wolves, I'm giving you a message from the widow and the rabbi that kind of recorded the story of what happened to the Jewish people. It's a vision of the past. And so we see the vision of the past, the woman, Helga, who was part of the Jewish group that was slain by the Cossacks, who knows how long ago. And she's there in her soul, you know, or earth, not earth, but her soul existence, her soul world, with all of her fellow Jews waiting for redemption.
This wasn't the same Helga, though, that we talked about in episode one.
I don't think so. Okay. I think she's the Helga of the Cossacks in the 1600s or whatever, whenever that happened. I don't know. But back in time, back in history.
Yeah, definitely looked older than 1960 or whatever.
Yeah. And just like Yuri wasn't one of those Cossacks. He's the grandchild of the... So maybe attach a couple generations and it would have been what? The early 1900s?
Right. Okay. So... You don't think that Yuri's dead?
No.
Why?
Well, he's standing there at a bar doing human things. He's bleeding. He's got his ear cut off, but he's not... He may be mortally wounded, I guess.
I think Yuri's dead. I think Yuri's dead at the end of this because Yuri never came back home.
Right. Well, I think his fate's been dealt to him by Paul here. So he won't be going back to Vimvarga.
Okay.
But yeah, so, Yuri got caught. Yuri got caught, and his justice has been delivered to him at the bowling alley or the place in spiritual heaven where fate gets delivered to people.
Okay, so Yuri is at the end here.
I think this so. Is,
okay. Okay, because, you know, we jump forward in time a little bit, and we see that Yuri never returned.
Right.
And I think Yuri would have returned or gotten a hold of VMV or something. Had he still been okay.
Right.
So that's why I wasn't sure. I felt like they were also insinuating the same thing about Nikki and Wrench. Because they never found them either.
Well, maybe they are. I don't think they are, but maybe.
No, they're not, I don't think. But we'll get into that in the spoiler part, I guess.
But if they were, that's a good tool to use here. If they were exited from the present earth, they would have been ascended to heaven, I think. And if Yuri is exited from earth, he would have been descended to hell. I think that for me is the best way to look at this. And this judgment point of Paul being the wanderer of the earth who doles out justice. Well, we know Nikki's not. This is stupid for me to say that because she has a job to do given to her by Paul. But Paul's the, you know, he's sending people on the roads that they will essentially go into eternity on from here.
Well, I guess that is so much. But then we get into the more normal, but maybe even the more sad than Yuri losing his ear. We're back at home on Christmas morning, opening socks. He got socks because his dad's husband bought him the PlayStation ahead of time.
Oh, jeez. I know.
Isn't
pretty
bad.
Ho-hum.
Yeah. And then there's Gloria, and she's sitting there with his dad and his other dad. And Gloria asks if he's having a good Christmas. And he goes, yeah, I needed the socks.
Well, don't you think she says you're having a good Christmas? And he says it's kind of weird. Not because he's getting socks, but it's the first one without Grandpa, isn't it?
No, I don't think that's it. I thought that's what it was. But then I think it's because it's the first year that his mom and dad aren't together. And so he's there with his mom and his dad and his dad.
How far away are we from Annis's murder?
Not real far. But I didn't get the feeling that they were super, super close. You know, she even made a point of that she kind of kept up with Ennis and kept him in Nathan's life because she wanted this male influence in his life. And I think he liked him and respected him, meaning Nathan to Ennis. But I think that this is messing up because Gloria says here, she goes, I know it's weird, but we'll figure this out.
Yeah.
And you can't really figure out when somebody's gone, that's the end of it. You know, there's not really a lot to figure out. But
maybe it's just weird for a whole confluence of things. It's like, it's weird now dad's got a boyfriend and it's weird grandpa's not here and it's just a weird, different new Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not maybe what he was used to before. But she gets a phone call and she ah-jeezes and she's on her way to the wreck site pretty swiftly. And this is where she passes the passerby's car, and it's upside down with the bodies lying on the ground. She makes it to the bus, and the guys there, he's telling her that they're still counting. They've got some that are dead from the crash and some from the assault. And she's like, what? The assault? The guy goes into, there's a stolen crotch rocket in the trees, three boot prints, and a ramp of sorts. And that he tells the story of what they've assumed, which is true. These passerbys were driving by, slowed down to do the Christian thing, saw what was going on. Remember when they went by and they're standing there with these, like, animal masks on? I mean, how horrifying would that be in that context? And then they kept driving and they found them 2 miles down the road. So they really gave these people a chase. And then she keeps asking questions. She wants to know about a female in there. He says there's not a female. And then he kind of blows her off. He says, you know, we'll let you know.
As Gloria is used to by the men in charge of her in her field of work.
Well, right. But that's not her job. You know, I mean, this is not her job. And her going there, I'm surprised they even gave her as much information.
Yeah, but you would think between law enforcement officials, they would give each other a little bit of allegiance, and she gets shut down just like it was freaking Mo Damick here. Like, are you wearing a state trooper's uniform? Look down. No, well, you're not, so you shut up.
Right.
It's disrespect.
Well, we see that everywhere, including next scene, Si's ringing the doorbell at Emmett's house, and Mimo shuts the door in his face. This is what we talked about last time. He knocks again, and VMV comes to the door and says that it's all taken care of. Come in and have some ham and food. And today you're $5 million richer than you were yesterday. And did you notice this, the plate he put in front of Si?
Yeah, square inch was full.
I mean, it was like not just something on every square inch of this plate, but it was like piled up 3 or 4 inches on top of the plate. It was like this huge amount of food. And evidently, Vargas made like some kind of Christmas. It was Christmas Day, right? And so he's made some kind of Christmas dinner or something.
Michelle, have you ever answered your front door with a chicken leg in your hand like that?
I can't say as I have. Have you?
No, I can say I haven't.
Okay, I don't recall. I've answered the door in an apron and, you know, like stuff all over me from cooking, but I can't say as I've opened the door with a chicken leg. Nope. But Si doesn't want the food, so Varga offers him tea. And it's his mom's secret recipe, Mike, that she smuggled in her bosom from Wales to Bristol. So, yum. They really force it on him, too. I mean, as soon as he offers it to him, Mimo's like, sticking the tea right under his nose and everything. And Si tastes it and says it's bitter. And Varga makes him take more and says it smooths out nicely, just right in his face. I mean, that makes me, like, not be able to breathe very good to see these people this close in his face. But
and the camera jammed right up in there, too.
Can you imagine?
It's funny, out of all this religious stuff and this weird interpretation, we have to struggle our way through. The most disbelieving thing for me is that Si would drink anything handed to him by VM Varga after 2 or 3 episodes ago.
Well, right, and particularly when Mimo's got it ready, just like instantaneously, like they were waiting on him.
Yeah.
Varga says that Emmett's sleeping. He took a pill, maybe 2 or 3, and he'll call when he wakes up, and he ushers him outside.
He's all snore and drool right now. You won't want to talk to him.
Right.
That's a great way of describing good sleep, man.
Man, it is. And I don't know. It's very, very happy. But when Si gets out to the Hummer, he sees Emmett upstairs in the window looking out at him. And he waves, and Emmett just turns and walks back inside. What the heck is going on with Emmett? I mean, how brainwashed is he that he won't even wave to Si, who comes over on Christmas Day, to go down to the police station because they need to, based on Emmett's brother dying.
Yeah, I think he's broken, like insanely broken.
I think he's like brainwashed.
Or brain warped, because reconciling the events that we had questions about last time, Cy dropped Emmett off. We saw VM Varga in that same window, and we saw Cy just drive away, like not even warning Emmett. And now he's freaking a guest in the house. So I guess he's just, you know, he's just been, maybe you're right, brainwashed or broken and gone insane by these manipulations of VM Varga.
Well, yeah, I mean, it looks more than just broken. You know, broken is one thing, but the fact that he's looking out the window at him with, like, contempt was just, it's unsettling, and I think it unsettles Cy. But Cy walks into the office. He seems to be having some kind of physical trouble. He's sweating. The girl's talking to him about how somebody had to reschedule and all this kind of stuff, and Cy starts to cough. Then he throws up, and then he's like, well, that ain't right, and he falls over backwards. And that's what we saw in the upcoming last episode. Yeah, it was pretty bad. And then he's being taken out on a stretcher. They're telling him to stay with them. They're bagging him. They're cutting his clothes off. They start intubating him, which is putting in a breathing tube to put him on a ventilator. And so they, like, focus in on his eyes as this is happening. And then we flash forward to March 15th. And he's bearded. And we get, like, the pan away from his eyes. And he's got a trach. So we know that he's been on this breathing machine now the whole time. That's why they do the trach, is if you've been intubated for too long, then they do the trach in your neck as a more, you know, as a longer-term solution to the tube down your throat.
Did you get any kind of a Walking Dead nod here, Michelle, from the very first episode of Walking Dead?
Well, where Rick woke up and like that? No, I didn't, but that's interesting. That's pretty interesting. I mean, if Cy had woken up. But, yeah, that's an interesting thought. But we see that Emmett's sitting with him. So now we know that, like, 3.5 months have passed, a little more since everything else. But Emmett, I think, now is having the guilt and the remorse, which made me think back on Nikki and wondering if her remembering her last conversation with Ray wasn't guilt and remorse because she felt like she didn't do him right. Because we kind of seem to have this paralleling with Emmett sitting there with Cy. I think he felt bad because their last interaction
I think Emmett should feel worse about Cy than Nikki should feel about Ray, though. Because even though Ray suffered essentially a worse, I don't know what's going to happen to Cy, but Ray suffered a worse price than Cy had to pay. But maybe it depends on how long Cy lays there. Ray conspired with Nikki, though, and Cy did not conspire with Emmett. Emmett put all this on Cy.
Well, I think that's fair, yeah. But okay, so he walks out of the room, and Gloria and Winnie are out in the hallway. Now, this is where they made Gloria be stupid again, or frivolous-y again. I didn't like that. They're chasing him around, lots of talk, and he goes up to the parking lot to get his car, and it's Ray's car sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that one. Because I'm just, like, scratching my head.
Someone is pulling these feats on Ray, these actions upon Ray to make him go insane. On Emmett, right. So yeah. I think it's probably VM Varga making Emmett, pushing him to the edge more and more and more and all the time. And this is another one that he just pushes him to the edge. Because it's not that he forgot where he parked. He parked there, and they took his car and put Ray's car there.
How long was he visiting that would, you know, and where was Ray's car this whole time?
I don't know. Who cares? VM Varga got it from somewhere, and who cares?
But I thought Varga made a point of I don't know. I don't know if I have it written down, but I thought Varga didn't know he was there. I thought we saw that just a little bit later on. I don't know. Maybe not. But anyway, so Emmett goes into his office. He tells Madeline, I think her name is, the girl at the front, that he had to take a taxi. He either forgot where he parked or his car was stolen. He walks into his office, and this is where we see the scene from last week where everything in his office, all the photos, all the pictures, all the artwork, everything has been changed to the Sisyphus stamp.
Right. Yeah, so they're gaslighting. They're gaslighting him. You ever heard that term? It's like a Hitchcock movie.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they're gaslighting Emmett to think he's going insane because nobody else is even going to question this Corvette's here. That's my dead brother's car, and it's been 3 months. And now all these pictures. What the hell's going on here? Like, oh, what do you mean? What do you mean, Emmett? Nothing's wrong. They're gaslighting him. They're making him think he's insane.
So you think Varga's the one doing that?
He would be my number one suspect.
Okay, I'm not sure that I buy that yet. That seems way too easy. You might be right. But Emmett's so upset, he grabs Madeline by the arm, and she says that he's hurting her. He's grabbed her so hard, you know, he's so stressed out about it. And he apologizes and everything. And she says, well, you're probably just stressed about Cy and your brother. And do you want me to call him? And he says, Ray? Because he's thinking Ray's still alive. He starts right. thinking Ray has done this. And she says, no, Varga, you know, VMV. And she says that someone had changed this. It was changed when she came in this morning. And it's something that Varga would do, is right. what she says, which makes it seem a little too obvious that it would be him. But I could be wrong.
No, so then it's him. He needs Ray. I keep saying Ray when I want to say Emmett. He needs Emmett, like, powerless, but he needs Emmett alive because he needs the company. He needs the Stussy company to keep operating for his nefarious operation to keep going.
I completely get all that, and I completely get why he would do that. I just think it's such an obvious answer at this point that he's the one doing it. But maybe something needs to be easy in this episode. Maybe that's it. But
Did you also catch that Gloria and Winnie are doing all of this detective work on their lunch hour? They're doing this all, like, outside of the purview and the they're not supposed to be doing this. They're doing this on their own.
Yeah, I thought that was like their excuse for being there, but I definitely took it as this is not their job. This is just what they're making time for. Yeah, because yeah, so they still dogged. Care.
They're in pursuit of the truth here. They're not giving up. So that's really admirable, I think, of Winnie and Gloria.
I agree, but they made Gloria seem silly. The question she was asking and how she was talking to him seemed more like the beginning Gloria that we saw at the beginning of this season.
Why do you think that? I didn't get that at all.
I don't know. At the beginning of the season, she was kind of floofy and kind of airheady. And well, then in the middle
that,
of it.
Why do you think now she's like that?
I don't know. It just seems silly. I don't know, them accosting him outside the room. First of all, I'm not picturing that being the first time Emmett's went to see Cy. It seemed like that was a comfortable position for him. This is just the overall impression I got. I could be completely wrong. So they're not going to be there every time he's there, presumably, but maybe. And he walks out of the room. I mean, you know, he's even made a point of, you know, I've reported you to your bosses. So they've done it before, and it just seems like they're just throwing all this stuff at him and saying kind of, you know, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing at this point. And
well,
it
they're
just
pressed
seemed...
by time. They'll, you know, if they're there in their lunch hour and that, you know, Winnie's driving over from wherever or Gloria is from wherever and they have to go back to work at 1 o'clock or, you know, it's not like they have all day to, it's kind of frantic. They don't have a lot of time to.
That's a good word for it. Yeah, it felt frantic. And I think we've just seen Gloria so much prior to this. I mean, she did get frantic when she was talking in the office. I think in the last episode, she was frantic and told the whole story of everything in 90 seconds we talked about. But, yeah, it just felt a little frantic and it felt a little less, I don't know, smart as Gloria is. I don't know. That was just the overall impression I got. So Emmett goes ahead and calls VMV and says that Ray is still alive. And Emmett's telling him about Ray's car parked in the parking lot. And this is where I think, and I didn't write it down, but I think this is where V&V says you were at the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, he was surprised by that. So I believe he was surprised by that. I believe that. I don't think he had necessarily had anything to do with that. Or the gaslighting in the office or anything. I mean, I don't think. Maybe.
No, he's just surprised that that Emmett still cares about Ray enough to go visit him 3 months into a coma.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Ray. Emmett goes to visit Cy 3 months, and you're still going to see him? He's in a coma. Who cares about him? It's beyond this evil capability to understand compassion.
Yeah, but he had to know if he was the one changing out the car. He had to have known he was there, but he acted like he didn't know. But yeah. Anyway, Emmett's thinking that Ray is still alive. And this is where Vargas says that if Nikki survived, she's in Canada.
Right. So I think that's the clue to us that Nikki still is alive.
But what about... I don't know. I guess I assumed, okay, Citizen Z is dead. He's dead for sure. I guess I assumed if Yuri had come back, then I would have assumed that Nikki and Wrench were alive. The fact that Yuri didn't come back just made me feel like maybe they were trying to get us to think that Nikki and Wrench were dead.
But Nikki was given a mission by this guy that's a very important character now in this story.
You're right. That's true. To the Wicked. So I guess we'll see who she delivers this
Yuri may still be alive somewhere, but not with V.M. Varga. He may be we may see him in the, you know, in the pit of some mine, you know, who knows? He may be suffering somewhere on Earth still. He may be dead. He may be in hell. I don't know.
Well, Varga tells him, he says, you've won. And Emmett's like, I won? He said, yeah, life. Varga tells him to sit tight because he needs him to sign papers on a shopping mall. And Emmett says, I bought a shopping mall?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he didn't even know what's going on with his business or anything. So then we go to commercial. We come back. We see Mimo dancing through Emmett's huge foyer. And we see this, what was this? It was like this imposed image of Ray's face.
Yeah, his pale, bloodless face.
Right.
In the water of the toilet?
Well, not yet. This is where we just see like this image. It's like the see-through, ghostly
the fish
image.
Tank. It wasn't the fish tank. It was like watery, maybe. The fish tank, I'm thinking.
Well, we do see him in the toilet in a minute, or what looks like that, but Emmett's sitting in the chair, and you can see Emmett passed out in the chair. There's a bottle of liquor beside the chair on its side, empty, and we see this like imposed, ghostly, like see-through image of Ray, who raises his head up and looks toward Emmett.
Right.
And so I wasn't sure what that was. And because this is where Emmett gets up and goes to the bathroom, and he sees Ray's mustache reflected back at him in the toilet water.
Yeah, he sees essentially his own face.
Right. And he starts to yell, and Mimo runs upstairs. Mimo calls Varga, and he just says, mustache. And so Varga comes over, and Emmett's like ripping the hair off his lip. Now, I'm not a guy, and I've never had that issue. But I cannot imagine that would be very fun to try to...
It's a glued-on mustache, Michelle. They're gaslighting the guy. They stuck a mustache on him when he was passed out from drinking, and he wakes up, takes a leak, and sees himself like, oh, I'm turning into Ray. And it's a glued-on mustache.
Okay, so it was glued on. I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they glued on the mustache. They put the car in place of his car. I mean, they're making him think.
Okay, but Emmett's not stupid, right? If he's got a glued on mustache, he's going to know it's a glued on and not grown in.
He's going insane, though. You don't apply the same. It's not stupid or smart. That same logic. Somebody's insane is not stupid either. They're broken. They don't connect things the way they should.
No, and I, Look, absolutely. But most people would know a glued-on mustache from a regular mustache, no matter pretty much how far down you've sunk. And Vargas seems surprised about the mustache because he's asking... Well,
most people would know. I park my car here every frickin' time I come here. I know that I parked my car. You know that. But you're broken. You don't think with a good brain. You think with a broken... deranged, essentially, brain.
Sure. And if Varga had not acted like he didn't realize that Emmett was even at the hospital, I could accept that. But they made it a point to make Varga act like he didn't know Emmett was at the hospital.
Well, that's probably just, you still going there? Even though he knows he goes there, like, you still going there?
Okay, but what about here? He says to Mimo, I think, about, yeah, he does. He says, and you were with him the whole time? Like, well, how did this mustache get on his face if you were with him the whole time?
Well, maybe you're onto something, Michelle. Maybe there is a force outside of Varga that's applying, but I don't know what other evil would have the need to apply justice to Emmett where he deserves this. I don't think he deserves this.
Well, I think he does. See, I think he does. I think that's one thing I feel like we did find out in this, right? Because VMV is saying they've discussed this. If you don't sign the papers, you don't make the money. He's describing him as a hero to his bankers and his hedge fund people. But even heroes can lose sight of what's real from time to time. He mentions Ray and Cy being dead. And this is where Emmett tells him Cy isn't dead. And he hands him this mild sedative, which Emmett, we think, takes without question. Then he tells him to picture this tropical island, and he goes into that whole story and everything. But in the meanwhile, Emmett is agonizing over Ray. He is talking about Ray falling around when he was younger, just wanting his attention, how he... father.
He feels guilty.
He talks about an older brother taking advantage of a younger brother. So I think the truth comes out in this. And right. I think stuff's going on with Emmett because of his guilt. Remember, because we kind of wanted to blame Ray, I think, the whole time for, you know, you're a sad sack, you're blaming your brother because you didn't do as well in life. But I think maybe we're seeing that Ray was right.
Yeah, I think Emmett screwed Ray when they were kids. Like, these stamps aren't worth anything, but I like stamps. I'll keep them. You can have the car. And knowing full well that they were very valuable, I think he did screw him over.
Yeah, I do too. And I think he knows that. And I think he knows that's where he's gotten, how he's achieved everything he's achieved. But now, this is where Varga goes into this story about, he says, picture a tropical island warm. Imagine a day in 1945, leaflets fall from the sky to tell the Japanese soldiers that the war is over, the emperor surrendered. But down below, one man refused to believe, Hiro Onoda. The rest of the world went about its business, but this one soldier battled on through... he says different years, but it turns out that this guy, Onoda, spent 29 years holding out in the Philippines, and his former commander had to travel from Japan to personally issue orders, relieving him from duty in, get this, 1974.
Yeah, and we know that's true. We saw that guy on Gilligan's Island. No, but I think right. That actually is true, that a Japanese person thought the war was still on and wouldn't believe anybody.
Right. He continued to fight, and there was nothing left to fight for. So that was the story that Varga is telling him, but Ray's not hearing any of this. He's really agonizing, or Emmett's not hearing any of it. He's really agonizing over Ray. And this is where Varga tells him no one remembers the second man to climb Mount Everest, and this is where Emmett's fallen asleep. And Vargas tells him everything will be clearer in the morning. So Mimo puts Emmett to bed, removes his shoes, and Emmett opens his hand, and the pills are still there. and then he opens his eyes. So I guess he's decided he's not taking this witch's brew from VMV anymore. Then we go to Gloria. She's in the station with Donnie, and she gets up to leave, and she's now serving eviction notices, it looks like. And she has, I think that's her divorce papers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. She's not chief anymore. She's doing evictions and that. Yeah, that's her divorce. Finally getting around to it.
And she signs it. You know, she was going to hang on to it, and she decides at the last minute to sign it. And this is where Emmett is walking in behind her as she's signing her divorce papers, saying that he wants to confess.
Right.
And that is the end.
Right.
Of episode 8.
Yeah, so Emmett thinks Ray's haunting him, which is still kind of insane. So I still think he's a little bit broken, but it's at least the turning point that inspires him to break free and go in and say, hey, I got to get rid of this guy haunting me. I got to tell the truth. So I don't know what that'll spin from this, but I think it's left pretty interesting, you know, if you can manage the weight of all this philosophy, to take it in and enjoy the story. But I really do enjoy it, and I really am looking forward to the next couple episodes.
Yeah, I still love Fargo. I thought this just, you know, parts of it I really enjoyed, and parts of it I just felt like were just a little bit off the rails for me personally. Like I said, again, realizing that I really do feel like, even though I didn't look, even though I wanted to, that I'm in the majority on this, because having you and then Mike both just really loving this episode makes me feel like I don't know. I feel like something's missing that I'm not able to, to enjoy.
Well, Michelle, if you remember when we read the titles 3 or 4 or 5 episodes ago, we knew one of them coming up was Aporia, and that's 309. And that's an irresolvable internal contradiction.
Yeah.
An irresolvable logical disjunction. So here we are. None of this makes sense. Is this what? Why would a guy in a bowling alley be saying this? How does he know this? And where is this guy who left the bowling alley and he's never been seen again by his boss? It's irresolvable. So I think they know that a lot of people are going to have all these contradictions and questions, and I think they're going to probably take a good shot at resolving them for us.
I think they will. So did you see the upcoming?
No, I didn't. What'd you see?
Okay. Gloria asked Emmett, who is he, the master pulling the strings? And Emmett looks stressed.
Gotta be Varga.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I'm not convinced that it's Varga pulling the strings on Emmett, but maybe.
Well, I mean, okay. It's gotta be that's who she's referring to.
She's following the money. Then we see a view from inside a vehicle where somebody's shooting toward it. Then we see VMV saying it's, this cracks me up. It cracked me up when I was writing, and it really just made me laugh now, saying it's lazy to steal from someone without knowing their name. We see a huge truck going through what looks like a huge car junkyard.
Okay.
We see Winnie talking on the phone outside of a house that's taped off. And there's an ambulance there, and she's saying, strangest thing, something about a homicide that I couldn't make out.
Huh.
Then we see the widow Goldfarb talking to Gloria and saying, and this is a murder? And Gloria says, yes, ma'am. Then we see a grenade being dropped. Then we see Varga taking a big bite of something. Then we see Winnie back on the phone saying, you'll never guess the Vic's name. She's still outside this house having this conversation. So we don't know who this victim is in this house, unless it's a big, beautiful house. And who's the only other person that they've shown, you know, I mean, I guess maybe Si's wife or the widow Goldfarb, that I'm just guessing. And then we see Donnie telling Gloria that this case is a twister. And then on Facebook's Fargo FX, we see Gloria discussing the dinner meeting with the widow Goldfarb when there's a ruckus in the hallway. They're at the police station, and the new chief, Mo, comes down the hallway saying he has solved these cases. And Gloria tells him that Emmett has all but confessed to Ray being like a tit for tat kind of thing, but Mo has different ideas that we don't know what they are yet.
Pretty interesting.
Yep.
All right, Michelle, if we go 4 more minutes, we can make it to 2 hours. So here's what I say. Line up the Jewish names like Feltz, Cy Feltz, Widow Goldfarb, and I think they'll be on the side of good here to deliver vengeance to the evil Cossack, evil criminals, whatever. Varga, I don't think, is Jewish, although I don't know. That'd be weird if he was Jewish, though, and he's kind of a bad guy. But I think Widow Goldfarb, just because she has that such a distinct Jewish name, that she's got to be someone ready to deliver some sort of vengeance. Right?
Yeah, to Varga. Maybe, something may happen to her. Like I said, this is a big, beautiful house that Winnie's standing outside, and I don't know who else we know that this could maybe be.
Yeah, so it was, I think Noah Hawley, because he's so good at telling this story, he's created quite a mess here, quite a dilemma for people to understand it. Nobody's going to read. I mean, we're the 2 percenters here giving it this much attention.
Sure.
So the casual viewer won't give it this much attention. So it does require probably some clarification within the story, not so you have to go to Reddit or you have to listen to 7 podcasts to figure it out.
Right, right.
So hopefully Hawley will deliver that for us, and he's only got 2 episodes to do it. I don't know how long, did they say how long any of these last episodes are?
I have not seen that. I did just look up Varga, though. It's usually Hungarian, and okay. When of that origin, its occupation was usually for a shoemaker or cobbler, just if that matters.
Okay, so it's kind of benign, kind of neutral to the... But Yuri Gurka, Cossack, that was clearly made, clear to us by this Paul. So, I don't know, Michelle. And who's the guy? Also, the other guy that was Jewish was the agent that Ennis beat to death with his own cane. I forget his name.
Oh, yeah.
Name.
Yeah, he was.
And he's kind of disappeared off the radar, too. Because isn't he still in a convalescent home somewhere?
Well, yeah. Yeah, he was last we heard. Yep.
So anyway, I think Noah Hawley will bring us these answers, or at least closer to having us, realization for us to realize the answers, if not spelled out right for us. And if they're only an hour long, each of these 2 last episodes, it's got to happen in 2 hours of story time. So
yeah, they are really, really good about wrapping it up and tying it up and making you go, oh, okay.
All right, Michelle, 1 hour 59 minutes and 30 seconds, so let's say goodbye before we get to 2 hours.
Let's do, otherwise we're gonna like have to take a potty break in between or something. His name was Harold Zimmerman,
that's a pretty Jewish name. Yeah. All right, so I'll see you next week on Aporia.
See you then, Mike.
Bye.
Bye-bye.